Hey guys, I'm here to talk to you about Stitcher. Stitcher's smart radio, on-demand news, talk, and more for your mobile phone. Stitcher brings radio and podcast listeners a better way to listen to their favorite shows and helps them discover new content by delivering personalized audio streams on demand right to your smartphone. How Did I Get Here is now on Stitcher, along with over 5,000 other shows. You can listen to us on your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or any of the pads. Stitcher Smart Radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
You may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host, Tom Howdy.
All right. Hello. I am Johnny. I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I have a great show for you today. The band that you are hearing right now fading out in the background, Sheboygan, is here with me. We sit down. We talk. We talk about their new album, Triple Fantasy, and their upcoming record release show, October 17th at the 1 to 1 Bar. But before we get to that, let me tell you what's going on with me. I got a lot of feedback on the show that we put out, the special episode we put out on Wednesday, episode 210, where I talked to Trisha Mitchell about a comment I'd made on Facebook about Bridget Jones and what's the opposite of masturbating. Look, a lot of you wrote in, a lot of you wrote on the thing. There was a lot of response. A lot of people listened to it. There were a lot of likes. There was a lot of support afterwards because we chose not to insult each other on a social media. We said, hey, I don't know you. You don't know me. We have differences of ideas. Let's sit down. Let's work this out and record it and put it out. And so I did. If you did not listen to it, go on back. It's just the last episode. It's 210. All right. So that's what's going on with me over here running around. I went and got some earplugs made at the suggestion of Corey from Sheboygan, our guest today. The other day we were driving home and he was telling me he was very happy with the earplugs he had gotten. And so I went down to this place, Archaeology, here in Austin, and I got fitted, and I'll pick them up in a couple weeks, so maybe my ears won't ring so bad, and that'll be great. Also, on the show today, before we get to everything, let me talk to you. We have a guest that was on here about a year ago named Erin Ivey. She had just put out an album. She was out supporting it. I've since seen her, but I found out that she recorded a live album in front of an audience with the Tosca string section. And she's putting it out as an album, and she's got a Kickstarter that's going to be funding putting this album out, like the back end of the album. So I called her up, and I said, hey there, Erin Ivey, tell me about your album. And this is how it went.
Johnny Gowdy.
Hello, Erin Ivey.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well.
I'm calling you from the studio.
Oh, really?
Yes, I'm calling you from
That's
the studio.
Special. Thanks for
Well,
thanks
you're
for
welcome.
Calling.
I wanted to find out what was going on with your Kickstarter.
It's blown up, man.
Is it blown up? But you still need more money, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So what's the deal with the album? You're making it with the Tosca strings?
Yes. Yes, it's been recorded. We recorded it a little bit earlier this year, and it's a collection of lullabies, and I'm calling them Lightly Dark Fairy Tale.
Lightly Dark
and,
Fairy Tales. Nice.
Yeah. And, of course, like Tosca are world-class musicians, so I'm really kind of thrilled with the way it turned out. So the Kickstarter is helping, or hopefully if it's successful, it will help me to finish all of the, you know, pay for the mastering and the graphic design, pay the artist who is designing all of the artwork. His name is Graham Franchose, and he is awesome. I don't know if you know Graham, but he's an amazing illustrator. And let's see, it will also go to pay for the packaging, of course, and all of the, making a million copies and 1,000 copies, really. And I have a stretch goal that if we hit the stretch goal, is really dear to my heart because then we'll press vinyl.
Oh, awesome.
And I'm so excited about that possibility.
Yeah,
so,
do you listen to records on vinyl?
I do.
Okay. So I always thought it would be weird if someone made it and they didn't have a record player.
I'm not so into it. Nobody would pay that kind of money if they weren't a vinyl nerd.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. So what is your website? Is it AaronIvy.com?
You can get there from AaronIvy.com very easily, yes.
All right, so then they can go there, find out when you're playing, also jump in there. And when is the deadline?
Deadline is middle of the day on the 20th. I should know this. Hang on, let me pull it up. Middle of the day on the 29th. So
okay.
At 2 p.m. Texas time on Tuesday, October 29th.
All right.
2013.
So before you get your Halloween costume, give to this album.
Please.
Yeah, do you have any special incentives?
Absolutely, yes. They start at $3. There's a $3 reward, which is basically like a single. And then they go all the way up. They range from little to big, and whatever you can give is greatly appreciated. But really, it's kind of whatever reward you want. Like, you can get your name in the liner notes. We're doing a deluxe edition, so it's a CD-DVD package anyway. And then the deluxe edition delivers your CD and DVD in a beautiful photo book with sketches and writings from my journal, pictures from rehearsals, and sort of the making of Whisper of the Moon, which is what we're calling this collection.
Wow, that's awesome. So what's on the DVD?
The DVD is, well, all of this was recorded live at AM Stereophonic Studio. So in order to pay for it, I sold about 30 tickets. And so we had a live studio audience. It was actually one of the coolest recording experiences I've had, because you can really, you can feel the energy of all of just that positive vibe that everybody brought into that space.
I'm excited about that.
And we basically recorded in the living room, and half of the living room was fans and friends and family, and half of it was me and this string quartet. And we captured everything live. And so the mixing was pretty interesting, because it didn't leave us a lot of options, but that actually kind of freed us from the tyranny of perfection as well. So it's been a really cool process, and the DVD will highlight some of the studio, work kind of behind the scenes, and then some of our rehearsals, as well as the performances themselves. So you will actually be able to see the very performances that you're listening to on the CD.
That is awesome. Well,
really
I'm looking
cool.
forward
I'm
to it.
About it.
When are you looking to put it out?
Well, I'll release it early to my Kickstarter supporters. I am shooting for late November, but I've put on the website that they'll be delivered early December, just because I'd rather pleasantly surprise people than
piss them off.
Than be late on my promise. So,
yeah.
That's what I'm shooting for. I would love for people to give these away as Christmas presents and listen to the songs over Thanksgiving dinner, that kind of thing. So
yeah.
That's my goal. And vinyl might take a little bit longer, but we'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
Well, I wish you all the luck in the world, and I hope everyone gets out there and kicks in a little money on your Kickstarter. It's a very, that sounds like a very exciting album.
Johnny, thank you for bringing some love to it. I really appreciate it.
Well, you're welcome. I think that you're a great artist, and I like you as a person, and I haven't seen you much, but I saw that on Facebook, and I thought we should try and make sure that this gets done.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. You'll be the first, well, after my mom.
Okay.
You'll be the second person with a copy.
Oh, thank you. Thanks, Aaron. Well, everyone go to AaronIvy.com, and we'll talk to you soon.
That sounds good. Have fun in the studio, Johnny.
Thanks, Aaron. All right, Aaron Ivy. So go there, contribute to her thing, and maybe you can get a vinyl album. And speaking of vinyl albums, my guests today are the band that do the theme song to our show, Sheboygan, and also some of my best friends. We have Gray Parsons, we have Chris Gebbard, we have Corey Glazer, and of course their newest member, my dear, dear friend for over 20 years now, Paul English. These guys just finished a record called Triple Fantasy, produced by one of my other very, very, very dear friends, Benjamin Hotchkiss. And, you know, it's a great album. It's incredible. You've been hearing this theme song now for 2 years, and there's a whole song to it. There's a whole album now that goes with it. It's available on iTunes at CD Baby. You can get the vinyl. It comes with a download code. You can download the record from iTunes, obviously. You can probably get the record at their record release show in Austin, Texas, Thursday, October 17th at the 1-to-1 Bar. So we sat down. We talked about them making the record, how they made their way down to Austin, what's going on here with these guys, my dear friends, Sheboygan. All right? Sit down. Listen to their story. They're very funny. They're very sweet. I don't know what else to say. Obviously, I'm going to say great things about them because they're some of my best friends. So without further ado, here's my friends, Sheboygan.
Got so dizzy, lost my head and fell to the floor. Tried to call you, now I can't remember what for. Flying all around, but they don't make a sound. Everything's slowing down till you come back around.
The lead in when you talk, right? Okay, so I'm here with Sheboygan. This is a big thing for me because your song has been our theme song now for over 2 years. And the album that you started out making, you finished off, and you got another dude. All right?
Yes.
That's and you have a new album out called Triple Fantasy, and you put it out on vinyl. And we all spend so much time together that it's weird to just all of a sudden like, hey, I'm interviewing you.
Yeah.
How cool is that?
It's like when a husband interviews a wife or something.
Yeah. Oh, I wish it was like Mary Matlin and James Carville. He's just an idiot. So...
Well, Paul's probably going to say something like that about all of us.
Oh, that's good.
They're all idiots. I don't know why.
So obviously, Corey, we play in Skyrocket with Paul. And so over time, you played on Paul's solo album.
Yes, Havenville.
Havenville, mm-hmm. Which is a favorite among everyone who's ever heard this album.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yes. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
And so how did you guys get... There was another guy from Skyrocket that actually produced this record, Benjamin Hotchkiss, who's not here, so we can talk about him.
Okay.
If we wish. And I have a lot of questions. I was listening to the album before you guys came here, but first of all, how did you guys just invited Paul down to the studio? Hey, come lay some hot licks, because he's an amazing guitar player, musician.
Yeah, and he looks magnificent too.
Yes.
You know, so
that's what you
that
need.
Was kind of the main thing,
and
really.
That really, and that's why we chose vinyl, because you can really hear how he looks
that's
on the vinyl. It's just a special thing about that medium.
I heard that if you let your eyes go out of focus while looking at the vinyl, it's like a 3D Paul's face.
Oh, yeah,
pops out.
Exactly. Yeah. He's giving you the finger.
That was gonna be a surprise scene, but now it's revealed.
So you guys, you had him come down and he played, and then how just organically you guys were like, hey, why don't you come to a gig? And
yeah, he played at a bunch of live shows before we kind of stopped playing for a while.
Yeah, and then, he did some shows with us at like Hole in the Wall. And,
mm-hmm. Yeah. I think really it was probably just a few shows, wasn't it?
Yeah.
We just did a
mm-hmm.
few.
Yeah.
And then we tracked the first half of it, the three of us, without
before
Paul.
Paul, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we came back to finish it, we were like, dude, we need to bring this tall, lovely gentleman in on this project.
He has good ideas.
Yeah, and plus when we tracked it, having two guitars, or if Rusty played piano, we could, you know...
You could track live and
track
still
live,
have the two guitars.
Had a good band vibe.
Yeah. Yeah, live and you guys get along. I've seen you play. You're good together. Yeah. Paul, you're always a welcome addition to any configuration you're in. A great guy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've played outside of Skyrocket. I've played with Chris. I've played with you. And I've played with you, Paul. Okay, Corey.
Yeah.
Sorry, I said you. So, and Gray, at one point, I was your landlord.
That's true.
Like
a decade ago.
A decade ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so weird.
It is weird.
So I have a different... And I married Corey.
Yes.
When they allow gay dudes to get married. So, okay. So this is your third record, right?
Well, second full record.
Second full record.
EP.
And you had an EP. And the original EP, who was in the band then?
That was Gray, Rusty, myself, and Johnny Vogelsang.
Okay.
And Darren Murphy produced it.
Okay. And so, yeah, you guys have stayed. You guys have had three great producers. The second was George Reef, great musician.
Yeah.
Guest
yeah.
on the show. Yeah, we love great. Him. Yeah. So the band started. Did Sheboygan start in Sheboygan? Because you and Chris know each other from Wisconsin.
It started here.
Started here. In
okay.
Austin.
Yeah.
And because you missed it?
Or? No, actually, our friend Terry, who at first Terry and Angel were in the band.
Yes.
And they just thought that was the funniest name in the world. And
they thought it should be the name of the band.
Yeah, it just kind of stuck.
It wasn't because you guys are like, hey, we're going to carry the flag of this town that we're from. Like, because you guys both moved down to Austin, but you guys played together up there, right?
In Milwaukee.
In Milwaukee?
Corey's from Sheboygan.
Okay. Oh, you're not?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, that's sad. That demystifies the whole thing for me. So how did you guys meet?
Let's go there. Milwaukee. We were both going to University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee, so... What was it, like a jazz guitar
jazz class? Guitar program.
What were you both majoring in music?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so what did you guys meet? And you guys had similar interests and started playing together?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much. And we lived together, too.
Okay.
Chunky yeah. Water.
College roommates.
What's that? College roommates.
Yeah.
And so what was your first band together?
It was Chunky Water.
Chunky Water.
Yes.
And what did Chunky Water do? What were they known for?
Playing gigs completely unprepared and...
very much like a poor man's Skyrocket. Like Skyrocket does Beatles and the Cars.
Oh, okay.
Dance. So
okay.
We would do... We went through a Beatles phase. We did like every Beatles tune, but like three guys that... We would practice, but we would play the song two times. You'd be like, that's great. And then just go out and play it live, and it was a lot of fun. But yeah, then we went through like a Steely Dan phase, and
you can't really go over those songs twice and then go do it
as a three piece. No, it really doesn't work.
So what was it? What did you play guitar and you played bass, Corey? You play bass?
We actually switched off. We would play halfway through the set. We would just trade instruments. And... Mm-hmm.
Did you ever go through a police phase? Did you ever do anything with trios, or did you try and do bands that were more than three people? Like when your phases, did you ever go through like a ZZ Top phase or like a
no
Buddy Holly and the Crickets phase or
You'd think that we would have tackled something.
No, yesterday. But I like that you guys were going for the big stuff. We did it. We went through an ELO phase as a trio.
We did some ELO too. It had to be the most complex orchestrated stuff, and we try to tackle it as a three piece.
So were you guys writing songs then?
No, not really. We
had a little. I mean, we didn't play them. I was writing a couple songs, but we didn't really play them live.
No,
just mostly. And then the one thing is we all make a living playing music, and so we all have to do more than just. It's not like we can. It's like if you're not in U2 now, you got to be in like 17 different bands because you can't. I think even the guys that play with Paul McCartney have to do other gigs when they're not playing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, were you guys playing with other people then? Were you teaching lessons? Like what was going on? Or was it like Nowheresville in Milwaukee? That's why you moved away?
No, there's stuff going on. We were both playing jazz as well.
Right.
We had a jazz group together and then separately at different times. And Rusty played in a wedding band and I would do other things here and there. Just kind of like what we do. Here, but it was nothing in the original music.
But none
thing.
Of you were baristas or anything, right? You were you were doing it.
We were teaching lessons, though, so we did.
You're still doing music.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, doing gigs, playing in a couple of groups, I was doing a lot of jazz gigs, like jazz guitar trio gigs and solo gigs. And going to, at University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, I was in the jazz guitar program, so.
Okay, so you did like recitals and stuff like that?
Yeah.
Is that the thing?
Yep. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of fun. It was cool. It's a great program. So.
Yeah. Did you guys get degrees?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, right. So you guys are like degreed musicians.
It's in a box somewhere in a closet in my house.
You don't hang it up in your studio?
I should.
Bloom it over everyone?
No.
All right. So then who moved to Austin first? Was it you?
I did.
Corey.
Corey?
98.
Right. Yep. And what made you like the music scene here?
Well, it was very different than Milwaukee, and I was looking for a change.
Right.
I have some family friends that have been here for a long, long time, and they invited me to come and check it out, and right. I checked it out and liked it and packed up my stuff and came here.
Yeah. And then how long did you talk to Chris? Were you like, hey, man, you got to move down here?
Oh, no, Corey came back early like a year. I remember it was like a year after Corey moved to Austin. He came back, and we were hanging out, and I was going to move to New York. I went out there a couple of times. And
was it because of the jazz thing? Because there was more you could do up there jazz-wise? Sing you can't really... Like, this isn't a good jazz town.
Yeah, and it was kind of like, I need to get out of Milwaukee, and I just want to move. And I had friends that lived in New York, and that was going to be the deal. I was going to move there. But there was, like, I went out there a couple of times and would talk to friends of mine that lived out there, and it just looked rough. It was like, you know.
So you got to have, like, 8 jobs. You got to... Yeah, right. Trying to get anywhere. What do you do with your equipment? That's what I've always thought when I lived there. Like,
and...
yeah, what if you're a guy that plays like Wurlitzer through his, you know, cool amp?
Good luck.
And you don't have a car.
Yeah.
You're a fool.
And you can't park. It just, it really is very hard. So Corey was here. You knew a dude here.
Yeah.
And you were like, well,
and he came back and he said, well, I can get you a teaching gig.
Right.
At
the School of Music through the great Dave Sebry.
With Dave Sebry.
Yeah.
And I called up Dave I said, hey, I heard you need a substitute teacher. I was going to sub for Van Wilkes because he was going to
Love
Europe
that guy.
On tour.
Yeah.
Excellent player.
Yeah, excellent really player, cool guy. Great guy.
And Dave Sebry was like, yeah, when can you be here? And I said, I'll be there in a month. So just spur of the moment, just kind of moved to Austin.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He's a jazz guy too, kind of.
Yeah.
I remember his old band Native Son. They were a lot like a Steely Dan kind of.
Mm-hmm.
It was more complex music than your average person.
Yeah.
In a good way. I didn't mean that in a strange way. So then, how'd you guys meet Gray? You guys did the thing with Terry and Angel.
Austin
Sheboygan was a
Gray.
Funny name. And then, how'd you meet Gray?
Had a
Austin School of Music
duo. Yeah. Dancing act at Le Bear. Me and Rusty worked the late shift. Gray was in the early shift. We would always get there early to watch his act.
Yeah,
because he was magical.
You know, Le Bear, that's where Elliot Smith played his last show.
I
was
there.
I was there too.
Man, I wanted to be there. I had to play a show that night.
What was it called, Le Bear? Then it was called Steamboat.
In fact, I remember going and seeing the old, you know, Sheboygan with Terry and Angel still playing with them. Like Johnny Vogelzang and I went to a couple of their shows when we were talking about starting to play with them when you guys played down at Steamboat.
You guys played at the Steamboat?
Yeah, which was really weird.
It was like
when
seven
people. Yeah, play seats about 500.
You know what? I played that place a long time ago, like 20 years ago, when it was a full-on like dance place, and they used to have music on like Wednesdays, and I did a show there with like Joe Rockhead, who was Bob Schneider's band, like in the early 90s. It was totally packed and it was awesome. And then the only other time I played there was when my band was breaking up, and we played our last show there with another band that was really big. So I didn't experience playing that place when it was empty, but I would go see David Bearwald when he lived here, and he would do these happy hours, and 6 people in that like stadium was the saddest fucking thing I've ever seen.
It's what was the name of that place then? It was called the... Was it still called... It wasn't called Steamboat, it was called...
No, it wasn't. You mean like when it was a dance club?
Right.
I can't remember what it was called. It was it was always something different.
Yeah.
It was never anything for more than 1 year.
Oh, was it something tropical? It had palm trees or something like that?
I think so, yeah.
Probably.
Something like that.
Probably.
Wait, and then, so was it the strip club before or after Steamboat?
The last thing it was a strip club, because that's what it still has the sign.
Now I just gave away that I made up that whole story.
So you went and saw them, and you guys, did you work at Austin School of Music too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I met them. I was working there, and I'd kind of seen them around, and I remember that they were playing in Angel's band, at the time when Angel Lynn was living here.
Yeah.
And so I would see them, and I just kind of liked their vibe, and I really liked Angel a lot. And so I remember I went to like Chongo's with Chris one afternoon, and we got burritos, and that was the first time I really talked to either of them. And then a couple of months later, we started playing together a lot. I started playing with Angel first.
Right.
And then we started doing the Sheboygan thing a couple months later. And it's been a loving group ever since then.
Yeah.
Loving.
Well, so
lots of love.
I have some questions because when you guys, okay, initially not when I did the song for the show, I just liked that song.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was putting music to like ads for the record, then I would consciously think like, oh, I probably shouldn't use one of Corey's songs because I already used Corey's song. I'm being honest with you when I'm saying this. Maybe I should make sure I use this. Do you guys, does that ever factor like when you're going in to do the record? Well, we recorded two of Corey's songs. We got to at least do one of mine now. Because I was in a band with a guy that wrote songs too, okay? And we had a dual frontman band. However, on a writing level, I carried about 75% of the thing. And there was a lot of times that, and I'm sure it worked with him, where I was just like, he would play me a song and it was like, are you fucking kidding me? I'm not playing that fucking song. You know what I mean? And so...
No, this isn't like that at all.
We're
very collaborative.
The other thing, too, that happened was that I know it was happening with him. So it was always happening with me, is that your girlfriend, your fucking friends, are,
no,
you should sing more songs. God, you're so much better. You know what I mean? That's not a factor in this band. Because you guys are all older. You're not like... We were young in our 20s and really like hungry to be number one.
Yeah.
And so maybe I would have stepped on some dudes.
And it happened really organically. Like when I first started hearing them, even before I played with them, it was all Corey's songs. And then we started playing together. And then, you know, then Chris like contributed a couple to the first full LP.
Right.
And then when we went to go start doing this, I had written a lot more songs. They were like, oh, we like those too. So we, you know, and then Paul writes songs too. So I can only imagine when we go to record again. It'll be quadruple fantasy.
So when you're doing that, it's gonna go. You're gonna integrate Paul into the whole thing.
Yeah,
you're gonna be a full on guy
once he's been fully hazed.
Yeah,
once we stick the pins in his
unless
chest.
Paul's gonna quit right now.
He's going through the vetting process right now.
My other question is: it's weird because unlike anybody else that's gonna interview you, I heard a lot of these songs as demos.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like when we play the songwriting game. I didn't realize just how much of a force you are creatively, Gray. Like I don't think I'm being uncool when I say yours were the best recorded with the coolest drums because you actually play drums and like, you know what I mean? Like yours, like when I first started getting yours back, when we do the songwriting game, everyone turns back in their songs. I'd be like, God, fuck, what are you kidding me? Like, this is uncool. You know, I think I even said it to you a couple times. Like, we got to get Gray out of there because he blows the curve.
Well, you know, I had a lot of time on my hands at that moment. And so I just was able to flesh them out more and stuff. But I felt the same way when I would hear other people's things.
Yeah.
Everybody else's stuff.
It is. Like, I think that that's the good thing about it is you get all those songs back and you're like, God, I'm terrible.
And it depersonalizes it, too. I think that's why I loved that, you know, context because someone would propose a title and...
Right.
I'm not trying to write necessarily about my life experience from some place of inspiration. I'm just
looking
trying
at to get
title
it done.
And writing it. So I work like that all the time now, actually.
That's
the whole way I worked.
That's good.
Yeah.
The other thing too is I noticed that, you know, when you listen to an album that has like a lot more than just one songwriter, like the White Album or something, you definitely get like slices of people's lives, and it's not just one voice coming at you or one life coming at you. It's literally like three completely different perspectives and existences.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Do you guys? I mean,
yeah,
did you notice
especially
that?
Especially on the new record, that actually was something that we were kind of concerned about. We didn't want the record to be a little
disjointed
too,
or something,
right?
Yeah. But it's not.
But yeah, and then in some ways that can be.
Good.
Cool.
Yeah.
Sometimes records are cool like that, where they're, you know, every song is kind of, is very different.
Right.
So.
So how much when you bring in a song, like how much, obviously when you record these, when you write a song, you're recording a demo, if it's a drums or a drum machine, guitar parts, maybe some keyboard parts, even backing vocals and stuff. How much do the rest of the guys have input when you bring the song in? Like, well, does anyone go like, oh, you know what? Let's nix that bridge. I got this thing that's better.
I would say probably at up to this point, everything, music and lyrics, are fully formed.
Realized.
Right. And then it's arrangement and individual parts.
Right.
So
yeah.
Okay.
That everybody contributes. But
did you have a lot of say when you went in? Did you, Paul, did you just do what you, was it freedom?
Oh, yeah.
Because they wanted you.
Mainly they had parts, real good ideas for parts.
Okay.
And there might have been some things I worked on a little bit with them, just kind of
there
ironing
were two,
right. out little things.
There's a couple of things today when I was listening to it. I heard some things and I wondered if it was you. I wish I would have written them down so I could ask you.
Well, okay, on the song Dying Sun, that there's a really distinctive, cool guitar riff that makes the whole song, and that was all you, Paul.
Oh, really? See, I don't even remember it. It's so organic that it kind of melts into one memory.
Well, when we were about to go in and record, we knew we had limited time. Like, we had, like, 6 or 10 sessions to do everything at Ear Studios.
So it was
like, let's have all our shit worked out. Like, we need to go in there and have a plan, otherwise time's just gonna fly.
So there was a lot of pre-production. How much did Benjamin come in and kind of like go through the demos and go like, hey, you know what, let's try and do this thing? And
he helped a lot, and then
he was so helpful.
There's some hand claps and backing vocals and things like that that sound Benjamin-ish to me.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah,
but I think it just comes from, I mean, like, I've been listening to that dude play for 25 years. So.
Yeah, he really, the thing I like most about Benjamin is that he's good at giving, like, emotional and attitude-related
amazing
feedback,
you know,
and it's like, it helps keep it from being sterile. I think it brought a lot of extra dynamism into the whole thing.
You know, whenever he's given me criticisms after a show, like, I remember, it must have been, like, fucking 8 years ago or something, I played a show at the Mohawk, and he was like, that one song, you should sing more songs in that key, because it works for you, and I can't help but every time I hear or sing that song, I'm like, man, he really has a point. You know what I mean? Because I remember when he first told me, I was like, what a weird fucking thing to tell someone about after a gig. Yeah. Hey, you should sing more songs in that key that you sang that one song. I'm like, what the fuck does that even mean? And now I get it, yeah.
You want to know what he told us? I think it was the first time he saw us playing. We got them playing, and he said, you guys sound really great, but you should wear tighter pants. I am not making that up. You know, that is, it would look a lot cooler. I mean,
is
there
anyone that knows him was drinking something right now? It just came out their nose.
That really is a great piece of advice.
It kind of is. You know?
It really is.
Yeah. So,
virtually.
Yeah. I mean, it's been all.
And we wear tighter pants now.
We do.
Yes. Nothing but tight pants.
And now, Paul, you have been you and Benjamin have been a creative force together for a long time.
We have a history.
A long history. You started out hanging out with the Duck Hills?
Right.
Kind of hanging out?
Yeah, I was just buds with them, and then roadied for them a little bit. And
but was it one of those things where, like, because I remember at that age, and we talk about this time a lot, because we met around that time, you and I did.
Right.
And was it kind of like, hey, we're going to Houston this weekend to play a show? You're like, fuck, I'll go.
Like, yeah, kind of.
I'll just go in the van. And then you helped them on their tour with Poi Dog Pondering?
Yeah.
Is that something?
Yeah, I was kind of the guitar tech and just kind of general hang around guy, buffer me. You know, sometimes guys need a little outside buffer guy to kind of hang out with. And I had a lot of fun. I would just kind of hang around. Plus, I crashed at the house for a little while, so I was there anyway.
When bands had houses.
And I'd run the board sometimes for them, and general dude.
Yeah. And so then you guys ended up playing together in Bongo Hate. You started it together?
Right, because the Duck Hills broke up, and Ben had a new project with the guys that were left over from Duck Hills, the drummer Steve and the bass player Dalton, and they were recording at Ben's house, and they made a great record, the Bongo Hate record, Plastastic. But then that kind of, you know, fell apart a little bit, and I had a band called the Resonators at the time, and that kind of fell apart. Right. So Ben and I were just like, why don't we get together and start doing stuff, and it just kind of grew out of that.
And then from that came the amazing Real Heroes.
And then
it's one of my favorite bands.
Yeah.
Me too.
Well, thanks.
Yeah.
I'm sorry not to interrupt, but I think just the love for the real heroes too is another factor of getting both Paul and Ben involved in this, because they just have that thing, you know.
Yeah, I remember too, like when the Real Heroes record with Elise came out, Greetings from Russia. That's when we started, you know, doing Skyrocket stuff a lot, and we were hanging out more. And then I found out what your level. I didn't realize that it wasn't all Ben, and I don't mean that anyway, except for that. Whenever you guys had Bongo Hate and I was in Gowdy and we had rooms down the hall, he was always there working on something. So I figured it was all him in some, like I thought it was all me, you know? It's like, we're in the fight, man. We're doing the struggle together, bro. It's you and me. Yeah. Pulling these guys along.
Oh,
but
yeah.
You had a lot to do. Like, you were a massive songwriter.
I did quite a bit of the writing, and so did Kenneth, the bass player. And but Ben... Yeah, Ben did a lot, you know, Ben did a lot of the writing. He did a lot of the lyric writing, too, because sometimes I would have lyrics, and Ben had ideas for lyrics, so, you know, I defer to those ideas sometimes. Sometimes, you know, it's like a lot of, you know, we did do a lot of collaborating, too. We'd, like, have, like you were talking about, I got a bridge, oh, throw that bridge in there and stuff like that. And but Ben did, definitely, he did a lot of work, because, like you say, he was always down there, going through the tapes, because we record rehearsals, and then he'd pick out cool bits and say, kind of do a lot
so
of...
So he was working even then as a producer?
Yeah.
Mostly.
Oh, yeah, he produced...
Like the producer of the band.
He produced our... Pretty much, he did most of the production, I would say. Or at least he did a lot of pre-production and arrangement. And, yeah, I mean, he was the guiding vision.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So did you guys do a lot of pre-production when you went in before Paul joined the band? You guys went in and worked on the songs and worked them out. You said you had everything ready to go because you had a finite amount of time. Did you guys do a lot of pre-production with Benjamin?
Yeah, we would rehearse, and we're, you know, he would come over.
Come to rehearsal.
And sit and watch and stare at us.
Did he bring a whistle?
He brought a whistle.
I did when I did the Canvas album.
Dressed like an NFL umpire. No, he definitely helped us a lot, and the songs were pretty much done, but he would come over and be like, hey, you know, like, this song needs to be a little bit, it's, you know, needs some more
things
energy,
like, hey, don't play guitar here and do the hand claps, kind of like in the second verse of Needle Hits a Groove or something like that.
Exactly.
That to me sounds like something Benjamin came up with when I hear it.
Yeah.
So with you, did you just go in and just kind of play stuff, Paul, or did you work out some stuff before you went in there?
Yeah, most of it was worked out.
Well, I would come over to your apartment or your condo, and we would work on, we would take one song and just have the guitar, you know, like work out the guitar parts as much as we could.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then you also did those great solos though, Paul, on the, that you just kind of did in the moment, right? I don't think you had
that
necessarily.
Well, that was that Steely Dan moment where we were sort of doing like Peg, you know, that story how Peg did all the, everyone was taking a stab at the solo and.
Oh yeah.
And oh yeah.
And I think Ben ended up liking that, and I think he kind of, shouldn't divulge the secret, but I think he kind of comp a couple of pieces of the solo.
It's
just two solos. It's not like 10 little pieces.
Yeah. That was just on one song, right? That was on...
That was on 20 Million Sweethearts.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's the end of one solo and the beginning of another.
That's not... No. Yeah. That's nothing.
Yeah. David Gilmour does it all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody does it.
Yeah. I'm not ashamed of it.
No.
In the 80s, I don't ever remember... I mean, I remember when in the 80s and early 90s, like, there was sort of this heaviness put on the guitar solo, like, where the producer and engineer would... the guitar player would never be out in the room with his rig. He'd be sitting in a chair in front of these guys, like... go fast and woo, and you know, do a dive bomb thing.
Oh my gosh.
So those were, I mean, did you guys ever record back then when people did that and they sampled drums?
And when was
snare
this in
drum?
The 80s?
In the 80s, 90s. I had some residual things.
Yeah, I just missed it.
Yeah.
I don't think I recorded, I first recorded in 91.
Oh, yeah. There was still going on then.
Yeah.
That's still gated reverb time.
Yeah, I guess
and too much smoke on the stage. Like, that was still... It took until 95 or so for people to take the smoke machines out and start cooling it out a little bit with the gated reverbs.
We did a demo with Angel and Terry, and there's one song that me and Rusty have a full-on Scorpions moment, little widdly 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 kind of harmonized, you know, thing.
Can people find that somewhere? Is that available? Did you guys put that out?
No, it was just kind of
up on SoundCloud, like for free or something.
I think
like,
I found a cassette. The Humble. All of that
I have
stuff.
It. Yeah, I have it. I mean, I guess we could do that for fun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's pretty funny.
It's okay to say yes is the name of the second record, right?
That's right.
And that is available on the iTunes?
Yeah, that's on iTunes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this is also available on iTunes. You can get the LP on CD Baby. Do you guys make CDs?
No CDs, LPs and digital downloads.
But I'm finding that few people that actually
and this is why we're not on Billboard.
Good thing we didn't do the 8-track thing we wanted to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, dude, I just read this whole thing about cassettes.
Oh, I know.
Again, are the new
They're coming back, yeah.
Are they making cassette players? Because that's I have a boombox.
You can still buy players at like Radio Shack and probably in maybe not Best Buy, but I think some play. I've seen
pawn shop
players
here. I heard that blank tapes though are really super expensive now too.
Really?
Like cassettes, yeah.
I just found a box where I have 4 TDK 90-minute cassettes still in plastic.
Ooh, yeah. eBay.
I gotta say, I mean,
I'm gonna keep them.
That's still my favorite. I've tried all the different ways of writing, but that still is the best and easiest way to put ideas down. I've used the iPhone and use everything else, but that just is so fast and immediate to me.
Mm-hmm.
Cassette?
Yeah, I still. Well, I can't do it anymore because all my cassette machines are broken. But
and I'm still a big fan of magnetism over zeros and ones. You know, just even when it's hissy and weird, it's cool sounding. It has something special about it.
Well, you have the 388, the Tascam Magic. Mm-hmm. That thing's so awesome.
Yeah, I love that thing.
Is it working all right?
Oh my gosh.
You got no warbles, no dead tracks, no weird tracks.
Everything is great. It's one of those things similar to what you described about your Rhodes, where I went to a cat's house to buy it off Craigslist, and when I showed up, he couldn't get it to play. And then I called my fiance, had her look it up on, you know, online, like this, look up this problem. Like I walked off to the side, and she was like, it's probably just the belt. So I offered him a really lowball price, and he let me get it, and I just bought a belt, and it works great. Like, it's crazy.
Do you record anybody else ever? Do you ever do that?
No, I always kind of
mean
to. You
seem like a guy that could and should.
I would like to. I Corey and I started a song together.
Yeah?
One of his songs. I get too busy, and then I'm not reliable.
That's a tough thing.
Yeah. But I would love to record other people. I think it'd be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who all do you play with? Sarah Hickman.
Mm-hmm.
And who else do you play with, Gray?
I play with Neil Kasanoff in The Dead Left.
Yep, love him.
I play in...
Neil's on the bus.
A couple of kids' music groups, the Jelly Dots, and then Neil and I have a kids' music group too, Groundwork Music Orchestra. And then I theoretically have a vibes quartet with, or that I used to do at least, with Donnie Wynn and stuff, but we haven't done that recently. What?
When did you do that? Where is that going to happen?
We played a bunch of shows. We haven't played in about a year, but I wrote some instrumental tunes, and
really?
We had like a Barry player and a Moog bass player, and I played vibes.
Who was the Moog
keys.
Guy?
Lindsey Green.
I like Lindsey Green a
oh,
lot,
yeah, he's
man.
He's terrific.
He's amazing.
Yeah.
And a good guy, too.
Oh, it was an awesome band.
Yeah.
It was really cool. It was really fun.
How do you like working with Sarah Hickman?
Oh, my gosh. She's just such an amazing person, and I love working with her musically, and... and she's a good friend.
Yeah.
She's terrific. She's
a good friend.
Yeah.
She's a lot like, well, she's not so much like she was when she was very young, but she used to be like Tigger to me.
It's hard
like,
for
that's
me to imagine
she was
her being
like,
even more energetic. She's so energetic.
Yeah, you know, before she had kids, she would actually... I remember one time her, like, the reason why is I think she knocked me down. And then was like, ah, what's up? You know, like, just so happy. I love her.
Yeah.
You know, when I got married, she was the lady that sang when my ex-wife walked down the aisle.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's her fault. No, I'm just joking. I blame a lot of people for that. Mostly my friend Craig, who you guys know from Houston, who gave us knives.
Oh.
Ultimately his fault. You're not supposed to give someone knives as a wedding
gift. Oh,
shoot. Because it cuts the bond.
Yeah. Makes you get divorced. It's his fault. So and a great
gift.
While we're on you, let's talk about the artwork. It's amazing.
Oh, thank
and
you.
What a gratifying thing to get to make art that's not just going to be in a 1-inch square.
Yes.
You're You can roll joints on it if you want to, if you're into that sort of thing and live in Colorado. Well,
I've heard that one could. I think someone even might have already. I mean, it wasn't me, but someone somewhere in town. Yeah, man, it's really cool. A couple of years ago, I mean, or to that end, a couple of years ago when Storm Thorgerson, he did a lot of the Pink Floyd artwork, or most of it, and lots of other great things. He was here in town, and he had done all these great album covers, and he was complaining about how sad it was to him, having been in the business 40 years, and now, you know, the artwork's this little thumb, you know, little tiny thumb thing on like on a screen, and but seeing his artwork up, you know, up close and big really inspired me, and so yeah, it's great. LP, can't beat it.
No, and it's a mixed medium piece.
Yes, it is.
Tell us how you did it.
I took a thrift store sofa size painting, and then I have all these. I buy textbooks. Old textbooks that I think have curious images in them. Uh-huh. So I just kind of looked through, you know, hundreds of pages of books and took out things that I thought seemed to work. And then I just started working on a layout. And I spent about 2 weeks moving things around on this sofa size painting and seeing where things should go.
So you physically did it. It wasn't superimposed.
Oh, no, no. It's physically on there. And then I glue it to it. And then I cover the whole thing in like a kind of an acrylic base so that I can oil paint over it. And I do some oil painting as well on there. And so, and I've been making collages like that for several years. So.
That's cool.
Yeah.
What, when you set out to do that, were you making the album cover or were you like, oh, I started this piece of art, this'll work?
No, it was totally intended. And I think this is about the fourth or fifth thing I've done that's ended up on a record cover, but it's the first one where I really sat down and I was like, this is going to be the cover for the album, you know? Although I did think it was going to present differently originally. I had a different idea for what it would look like on the cover, you know? But anyway, the layout was different.
Well, you know what's cool is that it definitely is very different looking and stands out when you see it, which I imagine as a person that does art for records at this point, that must be fucking really hard to do. Like, do something that someone hasn't seen. That when you see it from across the room, you're like, oh, that's a show. Even if you can't read it, you're like, oh, yeah.
That was definitely fantasy. Part of what I had in mind is, like, you know, so many of my favorite records from the time I was a boy, and I would go to the record store all the time, and you see these weird covers, and you're like, what's in there? What's inside? You know, who would do that?
Well, even, like, you know that weird Moody Blues album with that weird wizard guy on the front? That used to scare the shit out of me. I didn't know that that was the same record I was hearing, because I was okay with that. I just didn't like this thing. Exactly. I thought it was the rain part of Riders on the Storm. That's what I always thought that was. I was like, I don't like that album. This, it's raining. It sounds weird. And the wizard's looking through his ball. and there a kid like in it too? Or a kid's looking in the ball? Something's happening in that Moody Blues album that scared me.
Yeah. I think almost all my favorite album art is a little disquieting.
Like what?
On some level.
Like what?
It's disquieting. Well, like all those Storm Thorgerson, you know, things.
Is he hypnosis?
Hypnosis. Yeah, exactly. Just where there are things going on. You know, Wish You Were Here is a great example.
I don't. That really Presence. Bothers me.
So cool.
Why is one guy on fire? What's going on?
Yeah. So, and I think punk albums when I was a kid. Like I remember. One of the first records I really bought was a Dead Kennedys album, and it had this cool kind of collage on the front of it, or a couple of their records had collages.
Yeah.
And and they're just, you know, kind of creepy and cool.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
You guys, what are you going to do now? You got your record is done. It's out. It's in the stores. You have a October 17th. Right?
That's correct. Yep. Yeah.
That is a Friday? Saturday.
Thursday.
Sorry.
At the 1-to-1 bar.
Thursday, October 17th, 1-to-1 bar. What time? There's a lot of different...
9:30.
So kind of an earlier slot. Get the people out there. You got trying to find some more shows. You guys just did a international pop overthrow show. Good times.
Kind of keep the...
Yeah, that's cool.
Keep the ball rolling.
Keep the fire going.
Keep the rust off and...
Are you guys working on new stuff already, or are you just trying to keep up with the Joneses on this one?
We haven't done any new stuff
in a while.
In a while. I mean, it's kind of, I think once all this stuff is sent out and we start playing, then, you know, can let it do its thing and we can kind of start introducing new stuff. But with four of us, you know, contributing, it'll be pretty easy, I would imagine.
Yeah.
We won't have to wait around or anything.
No. No, hopefully What's going? You gonna do Havenville too? I hear you talk about that sometimes.
Yeah, Havenville
in the car.
Too. Back to Havenville.
That's coming back. Yeah. You gonna go with the same guys, Darren and Corey? That was a good combo.
That was a great combo. Yeah, and Lars produced.
And Lars.
And Trish sang on a track. But no, I don't think there probably won't be any more Havenvilles. It's kind of like
really
the story is over. Yeah.
I want more.
Oh, the story is over. Yeah, he referenced his own song.
Yeah.
Not many people can do that. That was great. What about you, Chris? You play with Sarah Hickman?
Yeah.
You also fill in Skyrocket for your sub for about
like
18 people in the band.
In Sheboygan. That's kind of the challenge, is that we're all side guys in a lot of different projects. So it's hard to, you know, all of a sudden years go by and you're like, oh, we recorded 6 songs. are we going to finish this record? So it's cool that, you know, to me it was so satisfying to get the LP and just look at it and realize that you have, you know, you flip the record over and it's got my name on a song, you know, on a big LP. I was just so stoked. It was awesome.
Yeah. Do you, hopefully you all have record players, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Be sad if there's like one dude. I can't even listen to my album.
Just keep bringing it into Waterloo.
Yeah. So where else can people find? How can they get the record to say they're in New Hampshire, listening to this?
CD Baby.
They can get it on CD Baby. Yeah. Okay, CD Baby. Just search Sheboygan.
Yeah, they're in effect the distributor. You might say.
Right. I was just talking to someone the other day that was telling me about this whole thing that they have all this distribution and their records like in Iowa and all this stuff, but they don't even have a band together to play a show. And I was just kind of like, well, that seems like a waste of, like, who's going to buy your record in Des Moines if they don't even know who you are? You know what I mean? That just seems weird to me.
Yeah.
But it seems, I mean, where are you guys at with this, like putting out this record? I mean, Corey, we've talked about a lot, but for the people out there listening, like when you're going to put out a record, it's a known thing that nobody buys music anymore for some reason. And vinyl is on the rise, and cassettes for some weird reason are on the rise. You didn't even make physical CDs. Like it's a very odd time. And I'm going to point this out because you guys did this record yourselves. You had a producer, you worked in regular studios as well as like home studios as well, but you went in and did the thing in regular studios and you paid for it yourselves without fan donations.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Hopefully the fans now will donate.
Right.
Like
right.
Why won't they buy records, but they'll give Joseph, you know, 15 grand.
What's going on there? I've been thinking about that. Like, no. Yeah. A lot, you know.
Why won't they buy $15,000 worth of records, but they'll give it to them?
No, it's a mystery, but...
Mm-hmm. But you guys didn't want to have... Like, you obviously, if you get into something like that, you have to donate a chunk of time to giving whatever these people get for having done this, like writing lyrics out or going to someone's house and making them dinner. Yeah. Or, you know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, there's shit like that on there.
Yeah.
People are like, I'll come to your house and cook for you.
Yeah. We thought about doing a Sheboygan car wash, you know, and stuff like that.
We'd have all you guys in speedos.
Terry Cloth short shorts.
Bake sale or something like that, you know?
And shoot a video for it.
But I do remember proposing it to Corey. I was like, Corey, maybe we should do a Kickstarter for this or something. And he was like, it's like, man, I'm tired of all this Kickstarter stuff. He was like, you know, it was like, if people want our record, buy our record. Like, if we could do something useful. And that's when we thought of washing the cars or making people breakfast, you know.
Yeah.
Tacos.
Skype guitar lessons or people do that kind of stuff. Oh, I'll give you a Skype songwriting class. Miles did one of those things. Like, I'll write a song with you over Skype.
But, you know, but to go back to your question, and this is just my hypothesis, but going back about why people won't buy records, but they'll contribute to these, you know, sort of fan sourcing kind of things, is that, you know, used to when a record came out, that was like kind of a communal experience, and you'd be excited about it. You wouldn't have heard the songs on the record until the record comes out, you know, unless it was leaked on MTV or there was a lead single or something. And then you go to talk to your friends the next day at school. You're like, did you get this record? Did you know about this? And that's your communal experience.
Did you see the Will Premier video of Billy Squire's Rock Me Tonight?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I did, yes. And so when you, but now, because there's such, that's been de-emphasized, the communal experience is the fan sourcing, you know, and I think it's unconscious, but it's like all this stuff's being offered
really
up.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
I've never heard anybody say that.
But
that's
just
the clearest. That's the clearest. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
because there's still people looking, they're still the biggest fans that would probably buy those records, maybe.
Mm-hmm. But it doesn't feel, but yeah, they don't get that instant feedback, but they can get the feedback knowing like, hey, so-and-so also gave right. money and we're helping make this happen. So I think it's a cool move. It's a cool movement, you know, for sure.
That's good.
Even though we aren't part of it.
But I also know, I also see that there was a point when you guys were in the thick of it. I don't see it as much right now. I did like maybe a year and a half ago.
Uh-huh.
Like, I mean, it was just like Kickstarter City. Like, everyone was like, you know, right. you don't have 10 bucks to give to everyone.
I kind of think, too, that from our perspective, that if we would have went that route and made the records and everything, it would be real easy to just kind of taper off. But now that we spent our hard-earned money and there's boxes and boxes of records sitting in my closet, it might be more motivation to get out mm-hmm. there and play shows where people buy records.
Yeah.
And just kind of work at it a little bit more, because you want to kind of get that money back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you guys know Cactus Records in Houston?
Mm-mm.
I bet they have records. I bet they, yeah, they do.
Right, it's a place in Dallas.
Yeah, it's like one. It's like the Waterloo of Houston.
Okay. What's the place?
You can do
in
stores
too?
There.
Dallas.
Good
Hills
records
or
in Dallas.
Great records.
Is it a record store?
Good records.
Oh,
yeah. Okay.
That's what it's called. Is Good Records.
Uh-huh. Oh, it's owned by Tim DeLauder from Polyphonic Spree.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. This, I know these kind of things.
Yeah.
I did an in store there for my last record. Only the label that. That little label that had put it out didn't send those people records.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, jeez.
It's a bummer.
So, there's people that came out to the thing and they came up to me after we played in the in store and they're like, I'm not seeing your record. I'm like, oh, it must be on a stand on the counter. I went up and there's nothing there. And I go up to the dude. I'm like, hey, what's up? He's like, yeah, that's a bummer about this thing. You guys never sent us CDs. We called them yesterday. It's like, oh, awesome. That's good. So at least you guys don't have to blame stuff on other people.
No, exactly.
Right.
Not yet.
Yeah.
We're aspiring to that.
You can always blame people for stuff.
That's true. Hey, you know, you better look out because you're the newest guy on the thing. You're mm-hmm. the quickest. Man, this record's doing terrible because of Paul.
Yeah.
It's that solo on
it. That's the thing about that.
Nobody likes this record because of that solo. So,
the big...
So you guys are. Is there anything I'm missing? Is there something you gotta say? Thursday, October 17th, 9:30, 1 to 1 Bar, Austin, Texas. You can buy this record physically on CD Baby if you're not in Austin, but you can go to Waterloo. Do you have it like at end of an year?
No, but I did talk to them, and that is on my list of things to get a couple copies there
under
today.
The S's.
Yeah.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. And the S's.
And at the gigs themselves, right? We'll have
and the gigs.
Oh, the
always,
gigs, yeah.
Always
and
at the
there's
gigs.
There's download cards, so when you get the record, if you buy vinyl now, you got to know that all mm-hmm. records you buy come with a download.
At least they should.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are there ones that don't? Because that's
A few
mean.
Don't. I've bought a couple recently that didn't.
That's not cool.
Yeah. I mean, brand new releases, 2013 or 2012. Yeah. I won't name names, but...
It's...
No, name names. Do it.
Tame Impala. Lonerism. No, no. Don't
heard
buy,
of
no
from
download.
Paul English.
Oh yeah.
I heard about that band from way before the craze.
I know there is a craze, right? I didn't know when I heard
about
it.
A month and a half after Paul played him for me. I listened to a lot of different podcasts, and everyone's like, "Oh yeah, Tame Impala."
I just heard them on the radio as I was pulling in here.
I'm telling you, they're sweeping the nation. You got your pulse on the. You got your finger on the pulse of the.
Every now and then.
Yeah,
I come through.
Usually
mired in the past.
Is there anything good going on you guys are listening to now? You can tell our listeners outside of Sheboygan, Triple Fantasy.
I just bought the new Janelle Monáe album.
I hear about her from Chris.
Yeah, she's amazing.
Yeah,
it's great.
She's great. Uh-huh. This is her.
Prince is on there.
Prince.
Yeah, Erykah Badu. It's a pretty awesome album.
Erykah Badu is great.
She's great. Yeah.
I just got a new record. There's this new band that just came out called Van Halen.
Oh, dude.
Oh, yeah. They have this self-titled
Sweeping the Nation
record.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and then I also got a record by
there's
these
a song
guys
about
who
a volcano.
I think could be good called... Yeah, exactly. And these guys who could be good called Devo. They have this record called Are We Not Men?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. It's gonna be hot. No, I don't think I... Every now and then I'll buy a new record. I'm terrible about it. I'm always just buying old records.
Paul, what have you been listening to?
Well,
Tame Impala.
The one thing I was thinking
before everyone else was
you turned me on to Wild Child.
Wild Child,
group,
yes.
And I really like
yeah.
out of that record, especially hopefully, that second song. It's awesome. So,
yeah.
Overused word.
Those guys those guys ended up doing a thing with Ben Queller, and they were on Carson Daly.
Yeah. All because of my podcast. Live,
oh, wow. But,
yeah, I thought that was a cool record. Was
it, did Ben produce them or something? Or
what?
Did Ben do some production
I think
for them
I think he was going to when they were on here like a year ago. So the record after the one that Paul has.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
That's cool.
I think it went through. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Didn't you play with him?
Yeah,
as
a little
well?
Bit. Yeah, he was on the Groundwork music record that we did with Neil Kasanoff.
Okay.
So, yeah, and I taught his son drum lessons for a little while.
Yeah, he's got
his
kids.
His older son.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a nice guy.
Super nice guy.
Oh,
my gosh.
I just had a chance to meet him at this Elliott Smith thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I sang with him and stuff. He was really nice. He was good.
Yeah.
He's real terrific. Good.
He's consummate. Like, when we worked in the studio, I learned a lot from just the couple of days we worked together about how good he is at choosing what he does. You know, I don't know quite how to put it into words, but he picks parts, you know, he like just instantly knows, oh, this little part will work great. He keeps it very simple. He plays it beautifully and his thinking's very clear. And
that's great. Good. He doesn't have like a false inflated sense of himself or anything. Like
nothing
he's like, oh, you know what? I'll be good at doing this. This is what I'm going to do. Leave me alone.
Yeah. No. He gets it. He's his musical skills are deep for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's a sweet guy.
He is a nice guy.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. There was one other thing I wanted to ask you guys about music.
Hey, I also wanted to give a shout out to Kyle Crusham.
Crusham
right. came in.
Ooh, yeah. There.
He,
yes.
Let's talk about that guy. The studio. Let's talk about Kyle.
Yeah.
He came in like two or three times, but really
I heard about
helped.
A motivational speech. There was rumor of a motivational yeah. speech
yes.
that he gave one day.
It yeah. wasn't even just a speech. Like when we played one of the songs,
Jimmy in the Ghetto.
Jimmy mm-hmm. in the Ghetto.
He like stood in the room with us and kind of like was like did these like cheerleader moves and would like yeah. jump around and.
Here's what happened. We were recording the song and awesome. we tracked all the songs in the record, or the most recent the second half of the record that we. Did this year
yeah.
to complete the record. We tracked all the songs live, at least the rhythm section. So we were tracking it live and you're trying to make the magic happen, you know, in the moment. And it just was not, it was just a dead song. And so Kyle just came down and just said, this can't happen, guys. This song needs this, like right now. And he just made that song happen right
yeah,
there.
It
my
really,
favorite
it literally changed. It's crazy.
You know who does yeah. that kind of stuff? And he doesn't seem like it. Mike McCarthy.
Mm.
Also, Mark Addison. He's a big mm-hmm. physical, like when something's going well, he's not shy about freaking out.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And weirdest one, dude, that was like that. You guys know Billy White? He's a guitar yeah. dude. He used to be a guy here.
Heard him on the podcast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He played with Don Dokken, but he was a guitar player of like Watchtower. You guys metal guys?
Oh my gosh. Yeah,
he
those
was
guys
the dude
were
from
crazy.
Watchtower. Yeah, huh. Well, I worked with him, and he was more animated than I would think he would be.
Yeah, was Watchtower was from here or something,
yeah.
weren't they?
Yeah, it was Jason McMaster.
Okay.
And Billy White.
Because I remember hearing them in about 88 or 89 when I was into this kind of, like, complex metal.
Yeah, yeah, they were.
And they were the most complex metal that I heard. It was insane.
Yeah, and they were real underground. Like, it's weird, man. I've met people, like, in Miami that when you bring it up, they fucking are like, how do you know the dude from Watchtower? You're like, oh, it's like, I play Tuesdays and he plays Wednesdays.
Yeah.
It's real cool.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Have you worked with McCarthy before?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I'm just about to do some work with him in a band, The Heavenly States, who I forgot to mention that I play with.
Oh, that should be fun.
Yeah.
He's a fun guy.
Yeah,
you know what
to
the
it.
Best advice I can give to anyone going to work with him? It seems, there are times when you're like, God, what the fuck is wrong with this guy? If you approach that with a sense of humor and just really start laughing and think of it as a bit he's doing, it's so fun to work with him. Because you'll just be laughing the whole time. You can't believe there's a guy that actually can whine like that. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's true. I don't mean it bad. I think everyone's got their imitation of Mike. It's like Lars. Their Lars is like this. And, oh, man, I don't. That's not cool, man. That's a good Mike imitation. So, Triple Fantasy, it's out there. People go and buy it online. These guys paid for it themselves. This isn't some Kickstarter shit where they come make you dinner because you bought their record. This is like a, they made a record, go buy it and listen to it.
Yeah, we ran some serious fucking paper routes. Oh yeah, earning the money for this.
You guys did, man.
We were slinging papers.
This guy had this thing, Don't Do Me Like That, like,
oh yeah,
3,600 times.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
And you had to do it about half of 36,000.
I had this thing stuck in the middle and late in the evening about 500 times.
500 times. Mm-hmm. And everyone's good. Everyone's healthy.
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I rode my bike over here.
You did.
Yeah.
Paul.
I know. I'm in.
Paul English. I'm glad. Shape. I'm glad you're here. Oh, that's exactly what I was missing out on. Let's talk pedals.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Let's just talk some pedals.
Alrighty.
All right. Well, you've been making some pedals. You made me a pedal.
Right.
I've used it. I love it.
I have one too. I love
you
it.
Have
I
it.
Have
you have one. You have one too.
Great. I and want
I, and
one.
I still you
want
owe, one. Yeah, I have a gray one. And
But yeah. You had a famous guy. Well, a guy's been on the show. Famous Billy Harvey.
Yeah.
He, going to your pedal on the Leno.
Right. Patty Griffin. I don't know if he actually used it, but I think I saw it on there.
It was on there.
Yeah. And yeah, he's got one of the. I made like a basically a clone of a Fuzz Face for him. And Lars was the first guy I made one for, just out of spare parts. And he really liked it, and so he
turned Billy on
to other people. I was making these for fun, but it seems like people like them, so I'm going to keep trying to.
So you're gonna make a website and stuff and sell them, try and get them out? Is that there a name where people, do you have an idea of, like, should people Google you but not the drummer of Willie Nelson?
I'm still working on all of those details. I'm not the most.
What was that? But there was a brand name you threw out. Oh, I remember it was really cool.
English Electronics.
Yeah, amazing. English Electronics.
Yeah.
I think that's what I'm going to go with.
That's a great name.
And I'm decent with a soldering iron. I'll work with you.
Oh, that'd be good, yeah, because I got to make a big run. I was going to try to make a whole bunch before, like, ACL, which I guess time's kind of getting short.
You have until Friday.
Yeah.
Or next weekend.
Yeah, yeah.
Or next weekend.
But, I'll try to have them in stores and stuff and just keep maybe online sales and stuff. I'm kind of new to all of that stuff, so I'm still learning how to do that.
Okay. Well, then you'll have to come on again, and we'll talk pedals when you have it up and running.
Yeah.
Because I love my pedal. And in fact, I went from using so many pedals to stripping it down to just a couple of pedals, and when I got your pedal, I went, tuner, your pedal, that's it.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks for
liking
it. Yeah. And more people should use them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Why did Billy play that cigar box? Why is that a thing now? Where did that come from? That weird kind of oil can guitar thing he was playing.
Right. Yeah, I don't know.
Paul McCartney, when he plays with Nirvana, he uses one of those. Yeah. Everyone's...
Craig Ross was playing bass with...
One, two?
It was Patty Griffin.
Yeah,
Craig Ross. And Billy, and Craig Ross gets all those really cool, weird...
Instruments.
Sounds, so I wonder.
Have you guys ever heard the album Craig Ross Dead Spy Report?
Yes, I love it. Yeah.
Good. That's, to me, that's a Havenville album of the late 90s.
Yeah. Yeah.
I went on a writing trip in Los Angeles, and I went to some, like, Amoeba Records there, and they had them on sale for $3, because at one point, there was an article, I'm so glad it didn't happen when my record came out, but they, in, like, 1998... They were like, these are the records that came out last year on major labels from Austin artists, and these are the sales, like in a column in the Excellent. Remember Excellent in the mm-hmm. Statesman?
Oh movie? Yeah.
Craig's sold like 450 copies worldwide. I mean, it was a major label album. It was on MCA.
It's a great record.
So
good. Amazing record. Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. And the weirdest thing about it, he had songs. Did you ever see that movie, Trees Lounge?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
The, like, three songs are in that movie.
Yeah.
And there's songs on a couple TV shows and stuff. Anyway, we had the same publisher guy, and he would tell me all this stuff about it. And he once said, I wish there were more guys like this in the music business. But I said, man, it's amazing you can't get more stuff going with Craig Ross. And he was like, well, he's not a rock star. He's not. You know, he's like a little guy. Doesn't like... to be around a bunch of people and stuff. And he was like, but a guy like Craig Ross always has to have a record deal. Like, there's guys that just should, because they're going to put out great records. And that's, you know, even if they don't sell, who cares? They're fucking great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I wish that music business was still around.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But
yeah. Maybe it'll come back.
I wish you a lot of luck with Triple Fantasy. Everyone can look it up. Sheboygan, the band. Go to CD Baby. Go to the record store if you live in a town that has a record store that sells it. If you do not have vinyl, you can go on iTunes, a very popular place to get albums.
Yes.
So I've heard.
That's what I've heard. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. People are
it's
using these
up.
Things
it's
called...
It's coming up.
It's a lot easier than bringing your record player to the gym.
That's what I think most people should do.
Yeah.
But thank you guys for coming. Paul English, Corey Glazer, Chris Gebert, and Gray Parsons. Thank you.
Johnny,
four names.
Thanks, Johnny, for having us on, and I am a huge fan of the podcast.
Yes.
Thank you for having our song on there.
Oh,
it's an honor.
Yeah.
By the way, thank you for the song. Because that,
that's how we got here.
Yeah. Yeah. And listen, that song has a chorus. You don't hear it if you listen to the show.
True.
Yeah, there's a lot more to that song than just the intro.
Yeah.
And the record's amazing, by the way. You guys did a great job. I'm glad it finally came out. I'm glad that it took that long. I'm glad that you're a part of it, Paul. You're a great man, and I love you. I love all four of you guys. And that's
a great
ending.
Thank you very
all right.
much.
Sheboygan. Right. Yeah, those guys are some of my best friends. It's always great to have them around. It's always great to hang out with them. I'm glad that we got to sit down and do a formal podcast and talk about the record. Get out there and buy it. Triple Fantasy, Sheboygan. You can buy the vinyl at CD Baby. Go to iTunes for your download situation, doing the MP3s. When you buy the record, you get a download card, so you get it both digitally and on vinyl. So if you're a vinyl person, vinyl out. I'd like to thank Sheboygan for taking the time to come by. I know it's hard for those guys to get together. They came by. We did this thing. Benjamin Hotchkiss, shout out for producing the record. Great, great production. Great record. All right, everyone. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Leave a comment and rate it. Helps with our advertising dollars. Also, don't forget to donate. If you're on the page, there's a little donate place on the How Did I Get Here Podbean page. So go there, donate, kick in a little cash to Johnny. Yep, that's right. Follow me on Twitter. Follow me on Instagram. I'm at Johnny Gowdy. Also, for all your How Did I Get Here needs, go to our Facebook page and like it. How Did I Get Here? Let's have a little bit more Sheboygan. Huh? I'd like to thank those guys one more time for doing the theme song. Give it up, Sheboygan. Let's get down.